Major sightings here.
All over the place.
Holy
Abnormal.
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
Paranormal. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I felt like something was near me, kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep him down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy!
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
Hello, and welcome to the program. It is my pleasure, as it always is, to bring you this show on this place at this time. We've got a good one for you tonight. As we delve into the topics of disclosure, of close encounters, abductions, the Clintons, the ETs, and who knows what else, with two of the top Canadian researchers, Grant Cameron and Bob Mitchell. They will be here very, very shortly. Two individuals that I know well. I think this will be actually about the fourth time that I've talked with Grant, probably the third time that I've talked with Bob Mitchell. They are the real deal when it comes to investigating and researching things that maybe you and I don't have answers to. And that's okay, because we'll eventually get answers with enough of these shows. That is for sure. The more you listen to this program, the more guests I talk to, the more information we are able to uncover. And eventually, sometime, somewhere, well, we will have some sort of answer for you on whatever the subjects under the sun might be. So in very, very quick order, we'll have those two gentlemen on the program, Bob Mitchell and Grant Cameron. No doubt, stay right here. But as always, like I've said in weeks past, I've got my finger on the pulse of what is happening in the world. If you're talking about it, I want to be talking about it. But I never thought that would include Pokemon Go. I never thought that I would be leading a program with a subject like that. But there is information that this may not just be a game, that this may be something a little bit more sinister. Alien mind control, perhaps. I'm not sure if I'm willing to go that far. You know, there have been some stories of Pokemon outings. I'm not sure if you call them hunts. I'm not sure what you call them. I just know that I actually had somebody ask me yesterday if I was playing Pokemon Go solely because I was walking and I was looking at my phone, and they thought that I was playing Pokemon. Well, no, I was not playing Pokemon. People have looked at their phones far before that game ever existed, and will continue to. It's a sign of the times we live in. Everybody's looking down, not up. Of course, there are a fair amount of people who look up, the ones who report UFOs. Grant and Bob know a great deal about that. Alien mind control, though, I don't know, you be the judge. There's a story that you can read, courtesy of Mysterious Universe. Speaking of mysterious, there is something weird going on. You know, I've been talking about abnormal sounds, mysterious vibrations, reverberations from the hollows of the earth for quite some time. Give it a couple of weeks, and if there isn't a report, well, soon there will be, about people who are reporting having either explosion-type occurrences rattle them. Others are reporting strange noises. Many of the times these are recorded, but many times they are not. Nonetheless, in a small California town, there is a mysterious booming noise that is bringing all sorts of theories, anything from mining operations to, well, this has got to be alien life. It's just got to be, friends. So there's that story as well. And then we've got another story with a mystery attached to it. Actually, over in North Korea, there's some activity on the peninsula involving an encrypted radio signal that's being broadcast widely out of North Korea for the first time since 2000. An encrypted signal is coming from this particular region. It's a 12-minute-long sequence of numbers read by a female announcer. It comes on just after midnight. Korean news agencies are reporting that it could be sleeper agents working in the field. That's never good, is it? Well, last week I meant to bring you the story, but of course, a great program, and we weren't allowed the time to do so, and I will never complain about that if I don't get a story in. Believe me, I'd rather talk to fine, fantastic, and interesting guests. There was a story about a robot car that was actually responsible for a death. And now we have information that it actually saved a life. This was Elon Musk. You know, if you don't know who Elon Musk is, you're probably not paying attention much in the world of space and energy. Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, that guy. It's that guy who I am referring to. Well, he is behind all sorts of efforts, including AI, artificial intelligence. You know, he's opened up a gym, or is opening up a gym, to train robots. That's the real deal. And one of his cars, he says, likely saved a life. Elon Musk of SpaceX, Tesla, actually shares a letter about one of these computer robot reaction times that are, well, much faster than our outdated biological capabilities. Some say that robotic cars could lead to car accidents and the like. But there you go. There's some news about how robotic cars are causing problems. And of course, here's another interesting story before we get to Grant and to Bob. This one from the great folks at the Daily Mail out of the UK. More than half of Brits say the moon landings were faked. By the way, the 47th anniversary of the Apollo 11 historic mission was just this past week, televised in 1969 to viewers all across the world. Two-thirds, by the way, don't believe that dinosaurs ever existed. And also a case of one of those stories I meant to bring you last week, but I won't complain that I couldn't, and it was the story of likely demonic possession. I don't know. You be the judge. Demonic possession or not, 22 school children playing a game of Charlie, which is something is probably as bad as playing with an Ouija board. One of them says they saw a man in black. The children were screaming and writhing in a traumatic incident, foaming at the mouth. They played a game of Charlie, and I would say probably not a good thing to be doing, unless it is, of course, you're trying to summon something of the kind, which, you know, is never a good idea. Never a good idea, right? Well, tonight on the program, I've got two wonderful gentlemen who are going to be joining me. They're actually from up in Canada. The thought of, will we ever get answers from somebody in power, somebody who can do something about this kind of stuff, somebody who has the evidence. Of course, there are many smart people all around the world who do have this evidence. Many bring them together, bring it together to conferences all across the United States, some even up in Canada. We're going to be talking about the Alien Cosmic Expo as well tonight with Grant and with Bob Mitchell, who have dedicated their lives to getting answers. They are two of Canada's top researchers on these subjects. A little bit about them each. Grant Cameron became involved in ufology in 1975, so many years before I was born. After witnessing a series of sightings across Manitoba known as Charlie Red Star, after compiling evidence on the ground, Grant then turned his focus on getting answers. Answers on the role of government and the president of the United States. Cameron was instrumental in recovering the UFO files from the Clinton Library. He's author of the timely new book, The Clinton UFO Storybook, ET Politics in the White House, along with Alien Bedtime Stories and more. Too much for us to cover tonight, but we certainly will in future shows. Cameron's website, by the way, presidentialufo.com, and there's a boatload of documents there. Bob Mitchell is an author and journalist and one of the organizers of the Alien Cosmic Expo, Canada's premier UFO conference, which just had some groundbreaking revelations. He covered crime and sports for the Toronto Star for more than 35 years and also wrote for the Toronto Sun. Currently, he's a freelance writer and co-founder of Toronto News Wire Services. Mitchell is author of 8 books, including What If? Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind and Intrusion, Alien Encounters. His website is bobmitchellwriter.wordpress.com. I believe all of our ducks are in a row. And from Canada to the United States, welcome Bob Mitchell and Grant Cameron to the program.
Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, Bob. How are you, buddy?
Good.
Well, Grant, I know that you had some problems. You've got a storm that's blown you over, Grant, last couple of days or so?
Yeah, we had a major storm here. I have no TV, no internet, and that's where I'm at, so I'm sort of lost. No internet.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming on the program tonight, because this is a show that I had wanted to do about a month ago, but due to some other circumstances, I wasn't able to. I want to play a clip, and then I want to get both of your reaction to what former Canadian Minister of National Defense and former Deputy Prime Minister Paul Hellyer had to say at that conference.
One additional person in Ottawa who would know is the Chief of Emergency Measures. And the reason I know is I interviewed the previous one, who is now deceased, and he went to Langley, and the CIA asked him if he would like to see one of these craft, and they flew him to Area 51 and let him go inside one and observe it and make notes and all of this sort of thing. I guess presumably to be in a better position to cope with it if one crashed here and he was involved in trying to do something positive about it. And but before he was allowed to go, he had to sign an oath of secrecy and not tell anybody. And during his life, he didn't tell anybody, including his wife. And an Air Force buddy phoned me, and he was dying with Lou Gehrig's disease. And at that point, he thought he should tell somebody. And I made an appointment with him, and then my friend phoned and said, you better get in touch with him right away because he's just about on the edge. I phoned him. He gave me a full report of what he saw and the whole idea of the inside of the craft and this sort of thing, and the fact that he had been briefed in many things, but now he felt he could tell somebody, and he thought that I would be a good one to tell.
Okay, gentlemen, by now you're well aware of what Paul Hellyer had to say at the Alien Cosmic Expo in Brantford about a month ago. Let's start with you, Grant. Was this a surprise?
It very much was. I've known Hellier since 1970s, and I'd never heard him tell the story. I had asked a number of people after he told it whether they'd heard him tell the story, and everybody said no. And it's a very significant clip because in my book on the Clintons, a lot of people believe that the U.S. president is out of the loop, that he doesn't know what's going on, that there's some Wizard of Oz running the show. And I say this clearly shows that if they're briefing Canadians on what's going on, they surely are briefing the president of the United States.
What about your thoughts, Bob?
Because of technical difficulties, I didn't hear what Grant said, but it was a total surprise to me. In fact, since he talked about this story, I've asked several people, and they were astounded, people that weren't at the conference, because some of these people know Paul pretty well and know his story and what he's told people in the past. And this came right out of left field. I don't believe it was part of his opening remarks about in general. It came from a question that was asked by one of the journalists, but it certainly shook things up. And he went on to, and I'll have to paraphrase this, but he basically said that the United States and most other world governments are really, there's no such thing as democracy anymore. They're run by a cabal that with at least one species that is probably having some control over the cabal, and that the politicians really don't have much of a say. So that was pretty powerful stuff from him. And, I'm sure Grant has much more details about this because I know he studied this quite a long time, but for me, it was one of the best moments of the whole conference.
Bob, can you sum up your response for Grant since he didn't hear it, and then we'll get his reaction?
Sure. Hi, Grant. How you doing?
How you doing, Bob?
Good. What I essentially said, that it was a surprise to me what Paul said. I had talked to some people afterwards, and they all were astounded that this information had come out about the emergency management person. Nobody, even people who know Paul quite well, had ever heard him mention that before. So it was a complete surprise to me. And then later on, he basically said that there wasn't any democracy left, at least as we know it, that the politicians weren't running the show, that somebody else, powerful group, was, and that powerful group also had connections to extraterrestrials that were also involved in this, I guess, fake democracy.
Yeah, I sort of saw it the other way. I saw the fact that it showed that people were in the loop, that if there is a disclosure, if there's an event that the government can't control, emergency management is the one group that you would need to have a plan. It's almost like it's confirming that the government has a plan to deal with whatever is going to happen. And the emergency management guy would be in the loop, as the same as I wrote an article after Paul did the story. It's on my White House UFO blog, where I talk about the fact that FEMA in the United States, there's indications that they also have a plan to deal with UFOs if there happens to be some sort of disclosure or something they can't control.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say that they weren't in the loop, but they would be in the loop if it ever happened. But that what Paul was, I think, hinting to was that even though they're in the loop, they're taking their orders from somebody else besides the politicians.
Yeah, it's definitely not the people running the show in a large part.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, the question is, why now?
Why now have the disclosure hearing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, why would Hellier say this now? Granted, said that, this kind of it came out of, I guess, left field, kind of surprised him and maybe you as well, Bob. So the question is, why now?
Well, I think he's angry. I think he's I believe 93 years old, and he knows he hasn't got a lot of time left. And he's just trying to, emphasize that enough is enough, guys. Let's get this out in the open and get the public to know what's going on. He has this, I think, a legacy he wants to leave behind, and I hope he lives for another 10 years. But He just seemed angry, a different kind of Paul that I had seen before. And maybe he just fed up. And if somebody pushed his buttons and he decided this was the place to do it.
Why now, Grant?
And well, one of the things I saw was that we really haven't really set up anything like this. Like, these kind of big disclosures happen at these type of events where you have, we did it in the United States, the citizens' hearing, where we had the congressmen and senators, where you present your best evidence. This is the first time we've ever done this in Canada, where reporters actually start asking serious questions. And it was in response to a question where they asked Hellyer, like, who knows in the government? And so it may just be that nobody ever asked Hellyer the question
as to
who inside the government is running the show.
Very well said, gentlemen. We're going to pause at that point in time. We'll come back with Bob Mitchell and with Grant Cameron. Both are up in Canada country. We'll come back with them talking more on the topics of disclosure. Later, Close Encounters and Abductions. And Grant's work on the ETs in the office of the president. His new book is all about the Democrat presumptive nominee, Hillary Clinton, her husband Bill, and about ET politics in the White House. I'm Jeremy Scott. Stick with us.
You're riding into the paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
Back to the program tonight. We're talking disclosure about Close Encounters, about abductions, about Hillary and the ETs, and who knows what else with our guests. We've got Grant Cameron and we've got Bob Mitchell. Both are joining me from Canada way, and we've been talking about some developments at the Alien Cosmic Expo in Brantford, which happens every year, and Bob is one of the organizers of the premier Canadian Expo. Gentlemen, we talked about Paul Hellyer's comments and actually played a clip for the audience. Any other highlights? You might have different ones, each of you. Let's start with Grant.
I brought up a number of issues that I thought were important. I mentioned the latest Hillary Clinton disclosure item where she's talking about disclosing the statements that have been made by Barack Obama indicating that he sort of knows what's going on. But there really wasn't that much. Paul Hellyer really took me by surprise. That was the one really big event that sort of surprised me. He's talked once before about a general that he talked to in the United States. And in 1967, he's also talked about the fact that the Canadians built a base, opened up a base for UFOs to land. But really not much that I heard that I hadn't heard before. Of course, I've heard most of the stuff around. There may have been a lot of stuff that the audience hadn't heard before, but there was a lot of interesting stuff there.
And Bob?
Yeah. I mean, I'm because we're sort of in the loop, we hear a lot of things and we read a lot of things, so a lot of it wasn't that groundbreaking to us, but I'm sure it was groundbreaking to everybody else. I mean, we had a ballroom, and it was jammed, but there was probably 400 to 500 people in there.
and there was standing room only at the back. And but there was two other things that happened that I think have made, you know, the viral connection all around the world from the videos. And one was Victor Vigiani's revelation, and he basically like he wasn't a member of the panel. He was the main person that put it together, and I assisted him. But I had known that he had done a Freedom of Information request to NORAD sometime in this past year, and they basically gave him nothing. But at the end of one of his requests, and it was just one sentence, it wasn't even a paragraph, it essentially said that over the last 5 years, there had been something like an average of 1,800 sightings or occurrences involving UFOs, you know, that NORAD had become involved in. And every year, there was an average of 75 intercepts. Now, we're not quite sure what an intercept was, whether it means that they actually sent fighter jets out to look at them or actually observe something. But after releasing that to Victor, he then got another letter or email from them saying that basically, even though we released this to you under the Freedom of Information Act, if you were to release something like this publicly, you could be in violation of the United States Security and Espionage Act. And so basically warning him that he shouldn't do it. Well, that really upset, and it really got to Victor to the point where he was shouting at the end, and he told people this, and then he essentially then demanded and dared the U.S. to come arrest him. That video clip went viral around the world. The other thing that was of interest in Stephen Bassett, I mean, he was on fire, as Stephen usually is. And he basically pronounced and predicted, and even though we've heard it before, he essentially said that Obama will disclose extraterrestrials before he leaves office. So we'll see if that happens.
That leads us perfectly into the next question. Disclosure from someone in power. What do you think, Grant, and then you, Bob? Will it happen in your lifetime?
Well, what I have a different sort of opinion than other people. I really don't see the big disclosure, but I've written books about it, and I've talked about it for years now, that the government is gradually releasing a lot of material. They're keeping the classified material, but they are leaking little bits and pieces. And even John Podesta, who is Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, who basically yep. helped her pick the vice president and will be her chief of staff, probably the most powerful Democrat in the United States, has stated openly there are classified documents that can be declassified, and that he's convinced Hillary Clinton to release material. So this is already as a disclosure where John Podesta stepped up and said there are classified documents that can be declassified. The official government position in the United States is there are no classified documents. Everything's been released. So you have that disclosure taking place. And Hillary's also made a disclosure where she says she's the first high-level politician that I'm aware of who's actually said they may already be here. Like a lot of people like Bill Clinton and other people will talk about the fact that they believe there's life in outer space and that, she's the first person ever to say that she actually believes they may already be here, which is confirming the fact that ETs have visited the Earth. It's very easy to say there's life on other planets. It's a whole different thing to say that they're actually here. So there's a number of statements by Barack Obama and the Area 51 story, which was leaked, the idea of MJ-12, which was leaked. A lot of this stuff has been leaked indirectly, and they're basically telling us what's going on, but they're protecting the classified material, I believe, because it still all comes down to using the technology for weapons.
Disclosure from someone in power in your lifetime, yes or no, Bob Mitchell?
Yes. But, like Grant, I do not believe it's going to come from a president, and I don't believe that even if it did come from the president, they would give you all the goods. They would be doing what has been happening for, you know, as Grant says, little leaks here and there. People just haven't been able to, well, the general public hasn't been able to put all the dots together. If they did, there'd be more people out there aware of this and more people asking questions of government officials. But I do not think that Hillary or Obama, and certainly not Trump, because I don't believe Trump is even into the loop at this point, would stand up and announce to the public, aliens are here, they have been for, you know, 50 years, and we have agreements with them, and yada, yada, yada. I just don't think they'd ever do that. And I've got a new book coming out. Maybe we'll get to that later on. But in this book, we have talked to a whistleblower who claims to have really high clearance in the classified material that would never be released by the politicians is quite astounding. And one of the things that, you know, really, I'm not going to let too much out of the bag here, but one of the things about these agreements is that the U.S., which is the main signature to the agreements, has a clause that is under no circumstances are they ever to reveal the existence of aliens. And if that happens, all bets are off on the agreement. So that could be one of the reasons why all these years they have gone out of their way to, you know, have plausible deniability, to ridicule UFO researchers, to put disinformation everywhere. But again, that's just one person's opinion, and we'll see.
Bob,
I'd be interested, though, if Obama does say something before he leaves office.
Yeah, exactly. He may be waiting for that particular time to leave, I guess, Hillary Clinton to pick up the what's left of that. And of course, what
if, wouldn't it be interesting if next week, I guess it's next week, next Thursday, when Hillary takes the stage in her address as the Democratic nominee, that she lets the cat out of the bag there? I mean, that even a little bit, that would overshadow everything.
Well, wasn't there, and Grant, you can weigh in on this as well, obviously, wasn't there some sort of threat, maybe by Russia, who told Obama, hey, if you don't disclose this, we are, and we're going to expose you as having known since such and such a date?
I'm not really sure whether that's a true story. I mean, it may have leaked. I mean, maybe out there. The way I always see it is everybody's playing a game of cards. And so if you're China or Russia or the United States, you don't have all the cards. And whoever puts their cards down first may put down the cards that the other side needs. So everybody's playing the game, trying to get everybody else to put their cards down. Because if the Russians have 80% of the secret, and we put our cards down and give them the 20% that they need, then they have 100%, and suddenly they're running the show. So I think it's always going to be an issue of using it for weapons and trying to find out what the others are up to, and trying to release as little as possible as you can. It's like the atomic bomb, where you want what's called lead time in weapons, where when you use your weapon, the other side is so far behind that the war is over before they're able to develop the system. And I firmly believe that's going on. So I can't really see that the Russians would ever release, because they're basically in a situation where all their material will come out and it will benefit the United States of America.
Bob, you could weigh in on that if you'd like. Otherwise, I'd like your senses on maybe who might disclose first, the U.S. or Canada.
Well, if I'd like to say I will in my next book.
Okay.
But
out September 30th, by the way,
September
Bob Mitchell 30th, writer.wordpress.com.
Because even if the government does release it, as I said, it will be pale compared to what myself and Jason Quitt are releasing in the new book. Whether the whistleblower we've talked to is telling the truth, that'll be up to people to decide. But he certainly makes an intelligent point throughout a lot of things that people have no idea is going on. Grant mentioned the weaponry. I mean, that is absolutely going on. And to the point where these species and extraterrestrials that have been helping the United States, They're not helping Russia. They're not helping China. They're not helping North Korea. And so the United States basically has superiority to anything anybody in the world could even imagine, and far more superiority that the U.S. government will ever let on.
Now, Bob, how would extraterrestrials be helping us?
It's my understanding they've provided advanced technology for weaponry, for spacecraft, the modern age, basically, in return for – well, this is black technology, basically – in return for being allowed free access to landing rights at certain parts of the United States without anybody bothering them, and access to resources that they need. And a lot of the resources are involving minerals, but not necessarily. It involves far more than that. But and it's changed over the years to what they want. But as is explained in the book, that if you're a U.S. – if you're a president of the United States in the 50s, 60s, and there's a lot of, you know, conflict. You just come out of World War II. The Korean War's ended. You're in the Vietnam War. You're tired of fighting. And if suddenly you're seduced, basically, with certain knowledge – you're going to bend over backwards to get that knowledge so that you will always have military superiority. And that's really what I understand it's always been about, the ability to make sure that the United States never gets annihilated by anybody. And part of the agreements also include a clause that allows that mandates that the extraterrestrials have to come to the U.S. aid if they're ever attacked. So... But they can't tell you this. They don't want anybody to know this, and that's why I think that it might just be their announcement will be, you know, yes, aliens have been here. We know they're here, but I doubt if they'll ever say they have an agreement. But who knows? Stranger things have happened.
All right, Grant, who's going to disclose first, Canada, U.S., or Bob Mitchell?
Well, I don't think it'll be the Canadians. I think the Canadians just salute and do whatever they're told by the Americans, and the same
Sorry,
would
Bob.
Go for all the NORAD.
Yeah, but I'm not
NORAD
part of the
countries,
government.
But
so.
United States is still really not in their best interest. I have a story that was told to me by a guy by the name of Scott Jones, Dr. Scott Jones, who was one of the people who helped brief President Clinton's science advisor. And he worked as an assistant to Claiborne Pell, who was the head of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate. And he wandered the world for Claiborne Pell, and he had a meeting with high-level Chinese officials. He told me the story, and he said to the Chinese, he said, "Why don't you disclose before the Americans?" And these high-level Chinese people said, "Let us tell you this. When the Americans disclose, we'll be a close second." And so I don't think it's in anybody's real interest to disclose. They would have done it a long time ago because there's just so many things that can go wrong. And if you're a politician, you really don't want to be there when this thing, you know, the stock market melts down or all these things that may happen. I think everybody's just very hesitant, and people want to do things that are for sure. You want to go down as, you know, a president who tried to help people, and you don't want to be the guy who might, you know, end up dealing with a situation that goes totally out of control.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I mean, if Hillary did get up next Thursday and say it, I can just imagine, I mean, she's not going to, I don't think she'd provide any proof, but I can just imagine if she does say it, what the reaction of Trump would be the next day. I mean, he would just literally tear her to shreds and tell the people, do you want a president with this Looney Tune idea running the country? So it would be fascinating if it happens. But as Grant says, I think they're weighing the pros and cons, and I think there's more cons at this point.
And I think a lot of it has to do with it's John Podesta. It's not really Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton has never brought up the subject. She has never, been the initiator of it. It's always been John Podesta, and she's answered three questions. That's all she's done. And those questions were forced by John Podesta encouraging reporters to ask her about it. And the way John Podesta looks at it is open government, that your vote is totally useless unless the people know what's going on. It's useless to vote. So John Podesta is in for open government. I don't think Hillary Clinton, she's doing it for John Podesta, but I don't think she would really want to do it if it was up to her.
I got a call from the 407 area code, Orlando, Florida. You are on Into the Paranormal. You're speaking with Grant Cameron and Bob Mitchell. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Something I want to ask Mr. Cameron, and I hadn't listened earlier in the program,
okay,
but I'm very familiar with his work, especially his work about musicians. And there's a reason why. And specifically, one thing, my oldest son is co-founder of Pledge Music, and they're very involved in the music industry now, and one of the leaders of this new movement of fundraising to produce music. But he's got a big, a long experience and everything, and he has these certain clients that have gotten in touch with me because they know of my ET experiences and the story that I told, because there's a band called Coldplay. It's quite famous. And they, years ago, made no bones about their ET experience, because I'm one of Chris's pianos. They have a picture of a UFO in the words UFO. I mean, the letters UFO. Well, as the world turns, and as we know, it's so strange, I end up getting visited by the same people who I was able to identify exactly who they were by researching different books. I visited Coldplay. Now, there's no... It's everyone knows that UFO sightings have become extremely more prevalent all over the world, and at an increasing rate over the last, I would say, 8-10 years even. And I want to tell Mr. Cameron what I know and what I have told, what I was told, and how it was explained to me. Okay? In 2005, Coldplay produced an album called X and Y. On that album is a song called Talk. If you read the lyrics to the song Talk, you will clearly see that it is an SOS. The words are very specific throughout. In fact, the entire X and Y album, if you read all the lyrics to all the songs, you'll see that it's not like anything else they produced, except there is a message of love and, universalness and things like that. That's throughout it, as it has been in other songs. But that song was broadcast live, I think, March or April 2005, which means it went out into the universe on radio and TV waves. And what I was told by the 2017s is that they received the message, and that's why they're here. Now, I was visited on September 15th, 2014, and it was witnessed by two other cops and my wife. And this is one of the three times that they folded space directly overhead. And that's when the visit started. And that's when I was introduced to all this information.
All right, everyone, hang tight. Take a deep breath. We're going to have to continue this after the top of the hour because, unfortunately, it is the top of the hour, and we've got a break for our affiliates. So everybody, hold your place. We'll continue this, an abduction story from somewhere in this world, not Florida. I'm still not sure where, but stick with us. More Into the Paranormal with me, Jeremy Scott, is coming up.
Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I felt like something was near me, kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep him down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy!
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
Want to thank our great radio affiliates for picking us up. WLRU 106.9 FM in Hillsboro, Ohio. Also in Valentine, Marfa, Van Horn, and Fort Davis, Texas. You listen on Valentine Radio, 1610 AM. Of course, we're on the TuneIn Radio app, streaming live. And then our podcasts are available up for you on YouTube, on Spreaker, and on SoundCloud. I appreciate you clicking on to those shows and helping drive those listeners up from week to week. Of course, this is week three of this program that you're listening to. And we have Grant Cameron along with a caller. We didn't catch a name, and where are you actually calling us from, caller?
Well, this will become relevant. I'm actually calling from a village called Potsdam, New York. It's up on the St. Lawrence River Valley in northern New York. And what is critical about where I am is where it occurred. And I'm going to tell you why. It's because if you draw a straight line from Fort Drum, New York, which is in Watertown area, home of the 10th Mountain Division, all the way up to Burke, New York, where Homeland Security has their Northeast Border Electronic Detection Center, okay? I'm located right in the middle of that straight line. So when you have two starships parked over your house three different times, at least, you can bet that our government knew exactly where they were.
Okay, I just want to say.
Okay, that's part of what makes the entire thing kind of relevant.
I understand. I don't mean to cut you off, but I'd love to hear your story, and perhaps we can set a time for you to share your entire abduction story with us. We've got Grant Cameron holding over with us here into this hour. He'll be joining us until the bottom of the hour, and then Bob Mitchell will be back. And so I want to make sure that Grant gets his fair time. So, caller, if you could bring this to a question, and then if I could have you listen for your answer on the air.
Okay. I am not sure how far he's gotten into this relationship between musicians, especially most of them are either on their way up or they already have been on top, but I've had UFO experiences. But I was explained how and why. And what it is, they are what they told me is that they are enlightened when they visit these certain people, mm-hmm. and they're injected with monatomic gold into the pineal gland. And I know this is true because they did it to me, as crazy as it sounds.
These people,
it's not just musicians. The master painters were all visited.
Okay, caller, your question in 10 seconds for Grant Cameron is what?
Okay, about expanding this relationship between these people who are exceptional in their fields and who are willing to either have talked about a visit or were willing to discuss a visit, because the area is much broader than, so I was wondering, you know, than just musicians. They're enlightened people. And I've met several of them, and I was given a list of 150 of them.
Okay, Grant, I know you weren't able to hear much of that, and I tried to follow along as well. I wanted to make sure that we got that to a question. He tells us that he was injected with gold during a 2014 abduction experience. He's calling from New York, and he wanted to know if there's a connection between musicians and UFOs.
Yes, there is. In fact, I'm doing a book on it as we speak. There is a direct correlation between a lot of the major musicians have either an interest in UFOs or they claim to have been abducted. There is a great connection. I'm not really sure. My guess is that if the aliens want to get out a message, that they want to get that age group between 10 and 25 that listen to musicians. So there is definitely a connection. I don't know. I couldn't hear the caller at all.
I'm sorry.
But there is a connection, yes.
All right, Grant, for those who don't know, Grant Cameron, I mentioned back in the early part of the show, in 1975, witnessed sightings across Manitoba known as Charlie Red Star. It's not something that I want to delve into here because it happened about 40 years ago. And I want to talk about what Grant is doing today. It certainly has been a program that I've done with Grant in the past talking about Charlie Red Star. His focus now, though, is on the role of government, the office of president of the United States. In fact, that's why his website is presidentialufo.com and also whitehouseufo.blogspot.com, because he writes about these type of issues. There's a lot of information, in fact, on that presidentialufo.com website, many documents, including the UFO files from the Clinton Library. Grant had a very integral part in recovering all of the UFO files from the Clinton Library. And Grant, I'm guessing you use a lot of that data in your new book, which folks can pick up on Amazon and other places, the Clinton UFO Storybook, E.T. Politics in the White House.
Yeah, most of the stuff that I used was the stuff that I got from the Clinton administration when they were still in power. The material that I got from the Clinton White House or the library, I really didn't use too much of that. But I followed the Rockefeller Initiative, which happened during the Clinton administration, where Lawrence Rockefeller goes to the White House. And the strange thing about it is I got 1,000 pages of documents, and those documents are all now missing. The government, the library says they can't find them. National Archives says they can't find them. But I did spend a lot of time looking at this initiative during the Clinton administration where Lawrence Rockefeller goes there and forces a lot of things out of the Clinton administration in terms of what was going on.
So your book, are you primarily focused on the Clintons, or are you focused on the office of presidency and maybe some of the previous administrations as well? Because I know there have been many presidents who have dealt with these topics.
I look at the Clintons because the Clintons were very, very interested. They're probably the most interested of all the presidents in the subject. They would talk about it an awful lot during their speeches. I go through the whole recent thing with Hillary Clinton, talking about this disclosure event, the role of John Podesta, who was the chief of staff for Bill Clinton during his administration. So I look at, it's just a historical book. It's not really too much into the politics. And I do spend the last two chapters talking about this issue of, does the president know what's going on? For many, many years, I believed that there was this conspiracy where the government doesn't know what's going on. The government doesn't know what's going on. And in the last 40 pages of the book, I have changed my opinion. I now believe the government knows what's going on. The president is the one that's running the cover-up. And the reason that they want you to believe that there's a deep, dark cabal running the show is that you can't interview the Wizard of Oz. You can't interview the deep, dark cabal. But if you suddenly realize that the president is the guy who's running the cover-up, he's behind it, then everybody knows where the president lives, and he starts getting asked questions. So in the book, I detail the fact that nobody ever got to the president. Like, Stephen Greer tried to get to the president. He couldn't get to the president. Lawrence Rockefeller tried to get to the president. Lawrence Rockefeller gave a briefing at his ranch where Bill Clinton was actually there with Hillary, and only Hillary attended the briefing. And that's because you have to protect the president. You have to make it look like the president doesn't know what's going on, because he's the guy that provides all the all security, all classification is done through executive orders, done by the president. The president is the chief of staff, the head of state. So if you're negotiating with a foreign power like aliens, you have to have the head of state constitutionally. He's the head of all the intelligence agencies, so all that material is coming to him. He's the civilian commander of the U.S. military. And constitutionally, the president has to be in the loop. I can agree that anybody else is outside the loop, that you may have the CIA director who doesn't know what's going on, or the defense intelligence, but the president of the United States constitutionally is responsible for all aspects. And so I spend 40 pages of the book, and then I get into talking about other presidents in terms of things that other presidents reported. For example, Jackie Gleason reporting mm-hmm. that he was shown the bodies by Richard Nixon. Yep. And so I go through a bunch of examples in an appendix where I say, if you believe the president doesn't know what's going on, then you have to explain this story by Jackie Gleason that he was shown the bodies. So the president does know. The president is running the cover-up, and that's the big secret. It's not so much the UFO thing. It's the fact that the president is running the cover-up.
Did JFK meet with extraterrestrials in the 50s?
There's two reports. There's one that he met with Adamski. This is one of the presidents they always said was out of the loop. Adamski claimed that he met with his aliens, and there's a story told by the a general who was in charge of Air Force One that Kennedy was flown to Florida and he was shown the bodies in Florida. So you have a number of these stories through all the different presidencies where various presidents are told different stuff. For example, Ronald Reagan, people say, well, when's the president going to disclose? The president disclosed in June of 1982. Steven Spielberg went to the White House. He screened the movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And at the end of that speech, in front of 39 people, and this was the CIA director was there, the head of NASA was there, the ambassador of Great Britain was there, a number of high-ranking people were in this room, and according to Steven Spielberg, we have it on tape, Steven Spielberg said the president stood up, he looked around the room as if he was doing a head count, and he said, Steven, I'd like to thank you for bringing E.T. the Extraterrestrial to the White House to screen. We've much enjoyed it, and I just wanted to let you know that there are a number of people in this room that know that everything on that screen is absolutely true. And Steven Spielberg said, he said it without a smile, he said it without laughing. And so the president has stood up. He has made these disclosures. There's been a number of high-ranking officials who have come out and basically said this is for real, and people just ignore it. They really don't pay any attention to what's going on.
Grant, do you believe there is a connection between UFOs and extraterrestrials?
Between UFOs and extraterrestrials, I believe that there some of them are extraterrestrials, but I think it's much more complex than that. That, for example, I've asked experiencers, a number of experiencers who've had long-term encounters. I'll always ask them the question, you had one alien that you were dealing with, and they'll say yes, and I'll say, for example, one in 1946, and I said, the alien that you dealt with, did it ever get any older? And everybody that I've ever asked, everybody says exactly the same thing. They maybe deal with this alien their entire life, and they'll all say, no, the alien didn't get any older, not a day older. And so then you start questioning, is this a projection? Is this an actual alien? Or is this more complex? Is this some sort of interdimensional thing where they appear to us as aliens in order to give us the idea that they're aliens, whereas in, like, 1895, 1896, 1897, there was all sorts of UFOs being seen over the western United States, but they weren't grays. They were, you know, guys hanging off ropes and stuff like this. So it's almost like the phenomena changes according to where we are in our development and what we're thinking about. It may be much more complex than just extraterrestrials.
Have you ever been abducted yourself that you believe, Grant?
I had one incident in 1976 where if I did get abducted, it happened at that one point where there was what's called, in abduction experiences, they always have what's called the Oz effect. And I experienced the Oz effect where an object had come towards the car. It was right above the car, and there was this great amount of fear. And then it was like cutting a movie film where the object moved just slightly to the left, and all the fear went away instantaneously. If I had been abducted, that would have been the time. But I have no recollection of any messages. I've had the download experience where I believe I was given a bunch of material that explained what was going on, but I have no recollection of voices or of beings or anything like that. 1975, I was about 21 years old at the time and had no interest in UFOs, and the only reason I was out in this town just north of the American border was that everybody was seeing stuff. I had no interest in UFOs, and when I saw the object that I saw, it was very close up, everything in my life changed, and I was just, when I told my story, nobody was really interested, and so all I was really interested in is somebody has to have the answer to what I had seen. Somebody must have the playbook, somebody must know what's going on, and that's how I ended up at the President of the United States, because he's the most powerful man in the world, and I figured this guy must know what's going on, and he must have the answer to what I saw in 1975.
Grant, at any point in time, do you wish you may have gone down a different path, considering it's still 2016, 40 years after your first encounter or experience, and we still really don't know much more from someone in power than we did back then?
No, I firmly believe I've basically it ended my university career, my life. I really just spent my life just studying this, trying to make enough money just to keep going so I could do this. But I now believe this is the most important story. And I talk to experiencers who sometimes will complain about how rough their life is or whatever. And I'll say to people that every day I try to give thanks that I got to play in this story, because if you understand the UFO story and you understand its relationship to reality, this is the Super Bowl of all stories. This is the most important story of all times. And I got to play in the story. I got to play in the Super Bowl, and I feel grateful every day that I got to play in this thing. I could have been born, you know, an untouchable in the streets of Calcutta and, you know, spend my day in the junkyard looking for something valuable enough to sell for food for tomorrow. I got to play in this unbelievable story of a very important development that's taking place. Whatever it is, I can guarantee you this is the most important story of all times.
Grant, is there enough subject material out there to continue this for the rest of your professional career?
Oh, absolutely. I have 6 books right now that I'm finishing off that I...
Wow.
I had all this material, and I didn't publish it. And so what I'm doing right now is I'm just going to basically publish all the material of all the stuff I've got. But there's a lot of material that I have not released yet.
A teaser for my audience, maybe, on what the subject material might be? I don't expect you to spill the beans fully.
Well, I'm doing, as I said, I'm doing the book on the connection between rock music, music and aliens and the paranormal.
Cool.
And there is a very strong connection. And I have a book that I've actually been finished for a year and a half, and I keep delaying it. This is a book on the role of consciousness, that I had this download experience that basically I was told that the basic key to all this is consciousness, non-local consciousness, and it gets to do with Ben Rich, who is the head of Lockheed Skunk Works, that's supposed to be back engineering all the flying saucers. When he was asked, how do they get here, how does it work, he said, what do you know about ESP? And we chased the former president of Penn State University around for 8 years. He had 14 honorary doctorate degrees as chairman of the board of the Institute for Defense Analysis. Very, very powerful guy. When we talked to him, he blurted out one time, he said, what do you know about ESP? Unless you know about ESP and how it works, you will not be taken in. And I refer to a top secret Canadian government document from 1950, where the Canadians were told by the Americans that mental phenomena was part of this the flying saucer phenomena, and that the flying saucer phenomena was real. Consciousness, non-local consciousness, is how it works. That's how they move the craft around. That's how people fly the ship. They use their mind. It has a lot to do with consciousness, and that's the key to it. So I do a whole book on consciousness and the relationship to UFOs and where good ideas come from. We believe it's a physical world, and when you start looking closer and closer, you look, the more you realize that it's not a physical world, and the physical world is not the basis of reality, and time and space really don't exist the way we think they exist.
Now, a lot of what you're hearing from Grant Cameron tonight about, you know, flying the ship with your mind, that's a subject that has fascinated me in the past. Me and Grant have done some pretty in-depth shows on this subject material. So what we're going to do is we're going to make some content available in the podcast that won't make the live airing of this program. You'll need to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Click the link at intotheparabnormal.wix.com/ITP radio or search YouTube for Into the Parabnormal, because you'll get more from Grant Cameron from a previous interview that we've done. When you subscribe to this podcast, it is free. We just ask for your support by clicking that PayPal button and donating what you can, or by supporting the advertisers that you're hearing on the program. So we'll go more in depth on some of these things that Grant has alluded to, but we've only got a couple of minutes left with him before we bring back Bob Mitchell to close out the program. So Grant, I want to thank you for another outstanding time. Now, as far as your book that's currently out, the Clinton UFO Storybook, you mentioned that you had some other works that you kind of put on the back burner to get this one out. I can think of nothing more timely than this as we head into the election. In the final 2 minutes that we have here tonight, make your case. What should we know about Hillary Clinton, maybe about Bill Clinton, about the Clinton family as it relates to the topics of UFOs and extraterrestrials, as we are just a couple of minutes away, a couple of months away, rather, from voting?
Bill Clinton has stated that he's infatuated with the subject. He's extremely interested in the subject. Hillary has said on the record that she's very interested in the subject. She does not believe that people are sitting in their kitchen making up stories about what's going on, that she believes these people are telling the truth. They have a very sort of mystical idea of the world. Hillary, if you recall back in during the administration when she was first lady, she was caught channeling with a woman by the name of Jean Houston. So she has this sort of mystical view of the world. She understands consciousness. She understands all this kind of stuff. But basically, as I said before, it's John Podesta who is behind this thing, her campaign manager. He's a very, very powerful guy, and he's the one that's pushing the issue. So I think something will happen. I'm not sure exactly. But Hillary, when she's asked the question, is very, very authoritative when she answers. For example, she's asked the question, we asked your husband, Bill Clinton, and he said he couldn't get anything. So what do you say? And she said, well, I'm going to look again. She wasn't at all disturbed by the fact that Bill said he couldn't find anything. She says, I'm going to look again. And she said, if I can get agreement, which means there's an agreement, there's a group that's going to look at this thing. If I can get agreement, I'm going to release what I can. So we'll see what happens when she gets in. She's in a box. She has to do something because she's on the record, and people are going to be asking her the question, what's going on. And even if she says it's national security, I can't release it, the cover-up ends because there's not supposed to be anything. Forget about national security. So it's going to be a very interesting time, and Barack Obama's White House is actually now facing questions. In May, there were three main questions put to Barack Obama's press secretary, and the only reason they got out of not disclosing was the press secretary said, I don't have a clearance to answer the question. Ask the president. And so far, nobody has asked the president, but that question's coming.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Best to you.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir.
It's Grant Cameron, presidentialufo.com. Bob Mitchell joins us again next.
Into the Parabnormal.
matter how hard you try.
You can take such a licking and keep on ticking.
Jeremy Scott is back. You're right. Into the paranormal.
The Canadians, Grant Cameron and Bob Mitchell tonight on the program. Such well-rounded expertise. They have various different backgrounds. Obviously, Grant has been doing this full steam. Bob has shifted his focus there. Bob's a former crime and sports writer, actually was at two newspapers in Toronto for more than 35 years at the Toronto Star. He also wrote for the Toronto Sun. He's a freelance writer and co-founder of Toronto News Wire Services. Bob, from a crime and a sports writing background, it seems like a big right turn to go down the path of UFOs.
It certainly was. How do I explain it? I always had interest in UFOs, and my wife and I would continually watch anything that came on TV involving the phenomena, including the popular shows that are still on now, such as Ancient Aliens and Hangar One, and there's probably going to be new ones coming out soon. So we were familiar with everything. But when I left the Toronto Star, took a buyout in 2013, and decided to just take some time and do some freelance writing, one of the things I thought would be very interesting to do would be to contact a UFO investigator in the area where I lived, and then freelance an article back to a local paper. In fact, I figured there must be dozens of such people in Ontario, and maybe I can make a few bucks selling it to many papers. So, you just don't go to the yellow pages and look up UFO investigators. So the only place I knew where they might have these investigators was MUFON. So I called up MUFON in California, and they said, sure, we got lots of people up there. And they put me in touch with Stu Bundy, who at the time was the Ontario director. MUFON. He's now the assistant national director, but called him up and he invited me to lunch. And I said, "Well, Stu, give me the names of the people that I can contact." And he basically said to me, "Well, I'm the only one," and that kind of threw me. And then by the time the lunch was finished, I not only joined MUFON, but I signed up to become a field investigator. So I quite literally became the person that I wanted to interview. So that's where it all started. And we thought that maybe there might be interest in the Brantford area, which is where I live. And so we had a meeting and decided that we would put an ad in the local paper and say we were going to have a local chapter develop, and if there was any interest, and people should come to this coffee shop. We expected 10 people. And I thought that would be a success. Excuse me. Lo and behold, we had 75 people show up that we couldn't get them all into the coffee shop. They were lined up the door. At that event, suddenly people one by one, and this was quite amazing, started to come up to me and whispered into my ear or wanted to talk to me privately, basically saying that they had a story to tell and that they had kept these stories to themselves all their adult lives. And even throughout their child lives, these people were in their 50s and 60s, and for some reason, they felt comfortable talking to me. I have no idea why, but that ended up developing into three books. The first was Incident at Pleasant Ridge, which involved a local UFO story that I had never heard of, but everybody in Brantford did, so I thought that would be a good intro. And then the other two books, Intrusion, Alien Encounters, and What If, Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind, basically evolved from the people that were at these meetings all having very unique and individual encounters with alien beings. And I spent considerable time interviewing all of them. And we ended up, I think there were eight of them in the first book, and we had about another eight in the second book, which... And all of them were completely different stories and introduced me to me, in fact, to different alien species. And it was kind of mind-blowing to me because literally at the time,
when I started this, I knew about the Betty and Barney Hill story. I knew about Travis Walton. And in fact, I got to meet Travis Walton for the first time a couple weeks ago, and we actually went with him to a barbecue and actually filmed him strumming his guitar. So we got along great, and very down-to-earth, believable guy. But him and Betty and Barney Hill were really the only people I had ever heard of that had encounters before. So this was quite an eye-opening experience to me, with all these people who were from all different walks of life. None of their stories seemed crazy to me. They all seemed that they were desperately to get it out. And you know, I soon learned there were millions of people around the world that had encounters, and it wasn't just a unique phenomenon. It was actually a worldwide phenomenon. And I knew right away that all these people couldn't be crazy, that something unusual had happened to them, and their stories were amazing, incredible, and some of them were told under regressive hypnosis. I saw the emotion being relived in them, and so that set me on the true believer path that the world we live in isn't really the world we think it is. And that led me to the book I did with Jason, co-authored with Jason Quitt, Forbidden Knowledge, Revelations of a Multidimensional Time Traveler, that really set me in a total other direction. And over the time, my feelings about abductions and alien encounters have evolved to, much like Grant Cameron, who really believes there's a consciousness effect going on here too, as well as a physical effect. And so some of the stories that I wrote really come down to that too.
And in your book, What If, which we've got the Amazon page linked up on my website, and it will soon be out among the social media, that was released last year. I talked to you about this, I think, in December on the previous program. We're not going to have nearly as much time to delve into those subjects here tonight, but they deal with some pretty horrifying medical experiments. Their universal connection to reincarnation and alien consciousness.
And I've come to really think now that abductions are not all what abductees or experiencers think they are. I believe that certainly some of them, and including some of the people in my two books there, experienced a physical abduction. I'm sure Betty and Barney Hills were physical. Travis Walton was certainly physical. But from doing the book with Jason and also the first story that's in What If clearly shows there's a consciousness part of this whole scenario. My belief is that most of the abductions are actually astral abductions, that the consciousness is actually what is actually being taken, and for many different reasons. Because so many people, I think almost all people who have an abduction experience while they're in bed, it always starts out with them suddenly finding themselves flying up, through the ceiling and into a spacecraft or into an underground laboratory where these experiments take place. And realistically, that is the same feeling that people who do out-of-body experiences always describe, that their physical body is still in bed, but they're all seeing a consciousness with a 360-degree image of what's going on, can go through physical walls. And so I think that's what's happening, because so many spouses say their husband or wife never left the bedside, even though in the morning they're telling them that I was abducted and had these experiments done. And the same thing with kids who come into the room while their parents are sleeping. They never left the room. And even kids who have had these experiences, the parents, often go in the middle of the night and their kid is still sleeping. So I think it's really a consciousness abduction, maybe an AB now, a CB, what is it? CA, or an astral abduction, AB, whatever term you want to give it. And of course, when somebody realizes their
facing an alien entity, it's a shock to them. So that's where the fear comes from. But I don't think the aliens themselves are the ones actually causing the fear. It's the fear that you're experiencing. Because, you know, quite literally, if you or I got abducted tomorrow, we'd probably be scared to death. The other thing that I noticed is that in my book, What If? Close Encounters, there's a girl named Josie who talks about some really horrible experiences where she was on a table and things stuck, you know, down her throat and also in other parts of her body. And at one point she even sees a hand going through her chest and she's in excruciating pain. But I asked her at one point after I'd written the book, and I don't think this is actually in the book, but I said, when you were on this table, did you see your body? And when she thought about it, she said, no. I remember looking up and I saw who was doing it to me, but I didn't see my hands, arms, or anything except I felt pain. So that kind of set me on another path saying that here's a validation of that. And since then, I've asked other people who I've written in the book if they saw their bodies, and almost all of them now say they don't remember seeing their physical body. So I think most are happening that way. And while there's supposed to be something like 80 different species out there.
Of aliens, really?
Yeah, well, supposed to be, depending on who you talk to. I'm not quite sure there's that many, but I think...
I'm not either.
I think a lot of people think they're seeing the same species, but different variations of them. But from doing the book with Jason, it seems clear that there's probably hundreds and hundreds of entities that live in other dimensions that we're not even aware of unless we are in the conscious out-of-body experience. And some are good, some are bad, just like there's good humans and bad humans. And these beings feed off our energy. So if you have fear or anger, you're going to attract the bad ones. But you have love and happiness, the good energy is going to be there.
Bob, have you ever seen a UFO? Have you ever been abducted? And part two of that is, would you wish either of those things to occur?
That's a tough question because... I can't say I've actually seen 100% a UFO. I've seen things that might be a UFO. But frankly, based on what I have learned since even writing the Forbidden Knowledge book with Jason, heading into our new book, I hate to disappoint a lot of people out there, but I think more than 90% of what you're seeing in the sky is good old American built spacecraft using alien technology. It's not other world beings flying around. They have no need to do that. So that's one thing that I can say about that. Would I like to be abducted? I probably wouldn't like to be abducted, but I sure as hell would like to meet an extraterrestrial on a friendly basis.
Oh, really?
I call it an encounter, not an abduction.
And what would you ask this extraterrestrial?
Probably the same thing a lot of people would ask. Where are you from? How long you've been here? Why are you here? Were you really involved with abductions at some point, and why did you do it? Are you friendly, or are you just pretending to be friendly? Things like that. You know, I believe that people are going to be absolutely stunned, shocked, amazed, and I don't know even what word to use. I said in one of our releases announcing that the book was going to be out, that prepare to have your mind blown, and I think they will. I might as well say the name of the book now,
yeah,
because it's going to be released September 30th.
Yep.
And the name is going to cause people all across the late night radio to be completely apoplectic. But as I said earlier, that I don't think disclosure is going to happen. So we've written a book called Disclosed, and it's the chronicles of, drum roll please, John Teeter II. And I can tell you people that it's not the John Teeter that came in 2000. This is a completely different John Teeter, and we'll explain why in the book. But essentially,
He lived most of his life working for a very highly top secret unit of the U.S. Air Force that was involved with extraterrestrials and time travel missions.
Was it John Teeter's son by chance?
Nope. Nothing like that. I don't want to give away too much, but for the prologue will reveal who he is. And we actually do deal with the original John Teeter in the book at some point too. But Jason and I have been interviewing John Teeter II for several months, 6 to 7 hours a week via Skype. And a lot of it has been audio and video. So we're looking at him while he's telling us these incredible stories. And there hasn't been a time where I looked at him and thought he was making this all up. It seems when he's talking to you, it's from memory. Mm-hmm. Because most of his life was not spent in this timeline. It was spent in the years 2030 to 2036. So he knows what's going to happen, and he knows what happened in the past. And one of the main reasons for writing the book is to try to get the Americans particularly to wake up and realize that we don't have a lot of time left on this planet, and global warming is real, and there are things we need to do now, because if we don't, this is going to be a species that is not going to be along here for a long time.
A crime reporting background, does that come into play as well as you delve into the paranormal and do some of these interviews and investigations, Bob?
Oh, I think it does, even the sports reporting. Because I, you know, during these 2 or 3 hours that we spend interviewing John, I mean, I'm continually peppering him with questions, and a lot of my questions are designed to find holes in his story, to see if there are any. He doesn't always give me the answer I'm expecting, but there are some reasons for that, and I quite understand the reasons because. He made it quite clear to us at the beginning that if he can't answer something, there's a reason why he can't answer
it.
And but I mean, I've looked into his eyes, I've looked into his mannerisms, and I do not think he's deliberately lying to us. Mm-hmm. This is from memory, and you got to remember, he being a time traveler, he's lived on many different times, and he actually people will be shocked by some of the things in the book, because being a time traveler and heading the time travel program for the United States, he has been able to change the timeline, and that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, but because
it's a story that people are just going to completely eat up. They're either going to eat it up totally, or they're going to have, you know, we expect to get grilled and be, hammered by some people. But I think a lot of people are going to read what's in this book, and they're going to come away thinking, gosh, you know, I always thought that was the case. So it'll be interesting what the reaction is from people around the world. We actually hope to get this in the hands of some politicians and some really high-ranking politicians, because the truth of the matter is most politicians, government people, even military people, have no idea what actually is going on and has been going on.
Yeah, Bob and Jason have to go on one of the big boy shows, but they promised to come here second.
Yes.
So September.
Well, you were the first person we actually went on with for Forbidden Knowledge,
yeah.
Revelations, and that kicked off an incredible year so far. That
so
book
yeah,
is,
and that is other show is second. So I'll gladly let them be first this time.
Yeah. But like the other one, we'll probably never be able to get it all into 1 hour, and perhaps we can get John Teeter on too with you.
Absolutely, I would love that, and listeners, we'll try to be putting together that in sometime in September, late September or early October.
Early October, yeah.
The book's not going to be out until September 30th, but you're getting kind of a bird's eye view here from Bob Mitchell. Bob, after you write this one, what's next for you? Are you going to continue to do these investigations and write books, or at one point are you going to enjoy retirement? Maybe you already are.
After I did the book with Jason on Forbidden Knowledge, I thought, you know, I'm going to take 6 months off and just do nothing.
Yeah.
Because it's really a mentally draining process.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I can't remember when we first started, John, but it wasn't very much after the book had come out. So we've been going gangbusters since then, still going on many, many late night talk shows, sometimes coming back two or three times. And it's just been an incredible ride. And the thing that we're looking at now is that we know how busy it's been with Forbidden Knowledge. We can't imagine what it's going to be like when the new book comes out, because there are a lot of John Teeter fans out there, and there's a lot of John Teeter haters out there. I guess we're prepared to talk to all of them.
Bob Mitchell, writer.wordpress.com, and at the Pitbull123 on Twitter, facebook.com/Bob.Mitchell52012. That is his Facebook page. And Bob, we appreciate your time. Good job as always, and keep the good work up. And I look forward to talking with you in just a couple of months about that new book, Disclosed.
My pleasure, and I would be remiss to say congratulations on having a new show pop up so soon. It's a tough business, I know, to get going, but I'm glad you're still hanging in there.
And Bob, your support means an awful lot to me, so the best to you.
You too, Jeremy.
All right, that's Bob Mitchell, and I still have relationships with many of these guests because they are such great individuals. They want to come back on the program time and time and time again. I can tell you it's coming up in future weeks, and we're starting to put together a pretty good schedule. You know, as you start a new show, you get your first show booked, and then you get your second, and then when you get some time, you get your third, fourth, fifth, sixth, etc. Taken care of. And so coming up in future weeks, you've got some good shows to look forward to right here on this program. Next week, it'll be July the 30th. Again, we do this Saturdays, 7 to 9 Pacific, 8 to 10 Mountain, 9 to 11 Central, and 10 to midnight Eastern. Filmmaker Christopher Gerritano will be my guest, and we're going to be talking about Area 51 and also about Bigfoot. Actually, Area 51 of the East, the Montauk Chronicles, will be our conversation with Christopher Gerritano next week. And then the week after that, I welcome Kim Babcock and Elisa Metis, MD, to talk about channeling and the afterlife. Ufologist Peter Robbins is coming up in 3 weeks on August the 13th. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott, saying thank you for joining me. And I might have some news on a possible additional show. You know, 2 hours is not really enough for me to talk to you every single week, so I want to do it more often than that. Stay tuned. Good night.